This pitch is hit high and deep to right field. Rowdy Tellez, did you? Yes, you did. Rowdy Tellez has just homered a little bit beyond the Ranger bullpen. A shot that ties this game at six.
Hixie with the call. Jake Berger would then end it. Pinch hitting for Jock Peterson and the Rangers with their biggest comeback win of the year. This is your home for Rangers baseball with Sean, RJ, and Bobby. And we welcome back an old friend, former Rangers skipper and bench coach for the Arizona Diamondbacks, Jeff Bannister on the D&M Leasing Hotline 105.3 of the Fan. Good morning, Banny. How you been?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing well, especially after last night. Take us through the emotions of that comeback that we're scared to ask you about.
You scared?
Nah. We deal with Jerry Jones enough.
Yeah, it's you know what? Listen, it was, for a fan, and especially a Ranger fan, it was a great game. For us, it was a challenging game, but there's that game gave you a range of emotions early and all the way through. All the way to the home run by Tellez, but more importantly, the extra inning. And listen, it's kind of where we are right now with a bunch of young players that are put in the fire early, if you will. The challenge of being a major leaguer, and we've got some quality players on our team. We still got a number of players that played in the 23 World Series. You saw that offensively, but it is one of those things kind of, how our season has gone to speak about it. We've played well, but there's been some challenges late in the games.
How are you guys able to get to Eovaldi? You did more damage against him than we've seen in the past 2 months around here. Was there something specific in a scouting report, an approach, or just had one of those nights?
No, you go back and look at our offense. We've had one of the best offenses in baseball all year long.
Yeah.
We've got some quality hitters in our lineup. It's these guys, I think they wear pitchers down more than anything else. And we take pitches. We don't give in to chasing a lot of stuff out of the zone. We force pitchers back in the zone, and our hitting coaches do a great job preparing our guys for what they're going to see, what they're going to get, and different counts, different situations. So they've been on top of that all year long. And if you go back and look, we've been one of the top offenses all year.
Banny, it obviously he didn't have his curveball working well, and he was lefty. When the lefties were up, he was leaving it out in the righty batter's box. It had no movement on it. It looked like on a couple of them. As a hitter, when you see a pitcher just not being able to control a certain pitch, do you take that out of your mind that he's going to use it? And from the flip side, as a manager, are you telling a pitcher when they don't have a pitch that night, let's move away from that? How does that work?
Well, you can't just eliminate your own pitch, right? If it's a quality pitch for you, you still have to be able to find spots inside the game to utilize it and in hopes that you get it back, right? That's part of it. But as a hitter, when we talk to our guys, listen, we're ultra aware of what is going on inside the game. Our guys pay attention, our coaches pay attention to it also. We will give our guys that type of information. And when you can eliminate a pitch as a hitter, if it's a breaking ball, the guy doesn't have his breakers, not throwing for strikes, this is not a quality pitch for him. If you can eliminate that, then it makes your job a little bit easier, right? And so you start zeroing in on, if it's a fastball and he has to use a fastball, what window is it coming out of? Where do I need to push him more out over the plate, or do I want to bring him back into me? But believe me, when you start limiting pitches on the hitters, you're going to be in trouble in this league.
How early in the game typically can you tell if a guy has something or not?
First inning, second inning, guys walk out and you can see the stuff coming out of their hand pretty quickly, and how they maneuver from inning to inning, and obviously, you've got technology in the dugout now. Our guys are well versed in spin rate and all the vert and horizontal movement on pitches, and that'll change. And so we stay on top of that during the game. Our hitting coaches do a great job of, you know, if the guy's losing spin rate, well, he's losing carry on the fastball. If he's, you know, the vert is not as dynamic, then you know what? Raise him up. You know, he's not the window of hitting becomes a little more precise in those situations.
Diamondbacks bench coach and former Texas Rangers manager Jeff Banister joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Banny, you know, you guys have been in, you guys have played several games over the last few years here in Texas, and there's been a discussion this year that there's just something about the way this ballpark is playing, and it's become a really strong hitter's park. What have you noticed about just in general the way that it plays and the kind of discussions you guys have about playing within these confines?
Yeah, you know what, when... You know, I was part of the design team on the stadium, and wow. One of the things that we talked about when we were putting the plans together that we wanted an offensive ballpark. We wanted the ability to have offenses play well in this ballpark, is namely the Texas Rangers, right? And so coming in as a visiting team, you know that going into it, you know the ball is going to fly, you know that that there's a lot of space in the outfield as well. Listen, there's all the different, you know, heights of the fences and everything. So there is a lot of offense to be had here. And you know that we talk more to our pitchers and defense more about it than we do our hitters. Our hitters know that already. They walk out there, they take BP, they know it. So we talk more to our pitchers on, you know, listen, you got to be a little better locating your pitches. You got to be a little more frugal in what you're doing. You got to attack in certain situations, and there are certain situations where you got to find a way to get these guys to hit the ball on the ground, which the Rangers don't do very often.
Banny, what is your overall assessment of the Rangers season? And in scouting them, we always ask this to the football coaches. You're taking the last three games of film. What are you doing baseball? Like, take the last week, 2 weeks. How does all that get condensed to prepare for the Rangers series, and your just overall thoughts on their season?
Yeah, you know what? That's a great question. Right, their overall season. You look at them; they've performed very well off the mound. Right, it's a great defensive ball club. They don't make too many mistakes defensively. They cover the routine play, and they can make some dynamic plays on you. But their pitching has been kind of their moniker all year long. I think they thought coming into the season their offense was going to be their moniker. And, you know, offenses become a little bit fickle at times, too. It can be challenging. And when we look at them, those are the things that I look at, like how is their offense playing? And I look at the entire body of the season, but I go back and I look at last 10 to 12 days on a hitter. And what they are doing, where are they at right now, and how they've been performing. And you know, that tells a better story than looking at the whole picture. Because you can get – the whole picture gets a little muddled at times. You think, well, these guys are performing really well, but last 10 days, you know, they've been super challenged in what they're doing. You know, they're not barreling baseballs. But listen, this is still – any time that you've got Semien and Seager in the lineup, you know, they're – Garcia, it can be a potent offense. I mean, we saw that last night. Langford hadn't, I don't think he had a home run in his last 100 at bats. Maybe I should have went back and looked at the last game. So, but, you know, I mean, it's an offense that can explode on you. You got to make pitches. I think more than anything else, this, you know, momentum is real in baseball. I just, you know, their offensive momentum just has not gained traction for lengthy periods of time all year long.
Banny, you guys are going to go up against Jack Leiter tonight. He's somebody who, you know, has had some ups and downs in terms of just his he was considered one of the top prospects. Then people were kind of low on him. He's bounced back and had a decent year this year. What have you guys seen from him as you've prepared scouting reports and gotten ready to go against him tonight?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's a big arm, a big fastball, you know, a guy that he can get it by you if you're not, don't get your foot down and ready for the fastball. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to get off of that tonight. You know, listen, this is any time you face a young kid like this, you know, there are days that he's going to have electric stuff and there are days that you know, he's, it may not be as sharp. I think for any young player, that is the challenge of being in the big leagues. How consistent can you go out and perform any given night? So for us, I'm not going to give up all of our secrets to you. I know that Sean would be rushing over and telling Boach everything I said on the radio.
The great Jeff Bannister on the D&M Leasing Hotline. I would like to ask about a pitcher you know very well. What are we getting in Merrill Kelly?
Tremendous human being to start with. We miss him a lot. This is an ultra competitor. You do the backstory on Merrill. You know that this is a guy that was on his way, Arizona State, drafted, on his way to the big leagues. Got sidetracked a little bit in Tampa, wound up in Korea, remade himself as a pitcher, and came back and built himself a terrific major league career at a later stage in his baseball life, if you will. Knows how to pitch, command guy over stuff, but has good stuff. He's not electric fastball, but the mix of pitches is what makes him so dynamic. And he's more of a, like, retro old school pitcher that he can read the barrel. He knows what the hitter's wanting to do off of him. He sees things very well, and he can utilize the command and beat you. You look up at the end of the night and you're going, well, why did we only get 3-4 hits and only 2 runs, right? This guy can do that to you. And I love the guy. We miss him. He was a leader inside our clubhouse. You guys, as this thing goes along with him, you're going to love having him on your team.
Banny, I know that there's a lot of the sport's done a lot of changes over the years, the larger bases, the pitch clock, all that. One that was talked about this offseason was that golden at-bat rule. And I know you've mentioned something about, like, being able to throw a hitter in at any point. Is that something that would have been well received by players, that kind of golden at-bat?
You know what? I think so. We've talked about this before and a lot. I think that we've kind of just scratched the surface on things that we could probably do in our game to really make it. I mean, our game's exciting anyways, and the traditionalists will freak out when we start talking about things like this. But I think players would love anything that is going to make our game a little more exciting, a little more challenging at times, add some more strategy into it. But to have that opportunity, I mean, it'd be like a WWE show, right? I mean, if you bring in somebody out of the dugout that everybody wants to see having it bat during a crucial time, think about if you could have used a guy like Barry Bonds anytime you wanted to. I mean, how awesome would that be? So, I think as baseball continues to progress, we'll see things like that. And it kind of makes me exciting, because as a manager or as a coach, being able to utilize some more strategy in our game is, I think it'd be a lot of fun, not only for us and the players, but the fans.
Well, look, you've always been an all-time interview. We absolutely miss that around here, and we appreciate you coming back on the show. It's great to hear your voice, and hopefully you're able to enjoy some time back here in Texas. And Choppy said he's got the check today, so don't reach.
Well, then we need to go somewhere big then.
Yeah, baby. 32-ounce ribeye lunch.
There we go.
Manny, thank you, man. All the best. The great Jeff Bannister, former Rangers manager on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Nice get from Ralph James Choppy. I always loved hearing his interviews. Like, you want a motivational wake up every single morning, you just listen to him on The Fan with the weekly coaches show. All right, it's a Tuesday, and that means you need to be careful of who your nurse is. And is this going to be the biggest NFL podcast of the year? It's going to make Bobby sick. I'm all over it. Which side are you on? It's PP in the morning next.
Well, congrats to Peyton Manning. He has found himself on the most toxic show on The Fan, and there's no number two.
He put together the single worst 30 minutes in live radio history.
That is right. Tuesday, 8:20. Every Tuesday at this time, it is time for a little pee-pee in the morning. And guys, look, sometimes lying may lead to success in life, but it can also backfire later on. We have a story here. Once again in Florida, bad things always happening in Florida and California. But we have a Florida woman who was posing as a nurse and treated 4,486 patients despite never having a valid license. 29-year-old Autumn Bardisa started working at a Florida hospital in June of 2024, but was arrested a few days ago after a seven-month investigation. I mean, the funny part is she was doing such a good job that they actually gave her a promotion at this job. She got a raise for doing a job that she wasn't even qualified for. Didn't go to school for anything, but you know, she had the fake license, which had expired, so she was fired. So everyone knew that, you know, she couldn't get the promotion. She had to go because she had the fake license. So this started the investigation. But I mean, I'm just, and how it all started was Autumn stole the identity of a nurse she went to college with, and then she used that to get the nursing job. I'm just stunned that she treated so many patients before something finally came up. Because you feel like, you know, doctors, nurses, all this stuff, you have to have so many qualifications. They better know that you're valid for that job.
Did it say that she had some type of medical background at all?
So she had the identity of this college student who had a nursing degree.
Right.
So she did all the background work, apparently, and had everything there. So it looked like on paper.
No, but I'm just saying, did she, like, love medicine, or
like, did she go through nursing school and didn't pass or something?
Right. I don't know. Any type of medical background?
I never saw anything like that. I mean, I'm sure she had some kind of, she had to do the research at least to be able to do anything. But I mean, you treat over 4,000 patients, you better know what you're doing. And if you mess up on the first one, it's probably going to cause some issues later on.
Look, she sounds more qualified than some people that actually work in the medical field.
This is from My News 13 in Florida. They said she allegedly told the hospital when she was first hired in July 2023 as a nurse technician. She said she was an education first. She said, meaning that she passed the required schooling to become a registered nurse, but had not yet passed the national exam to obtain her license.
Does that supervisor get fired, whoever hired her, or her counterfeit work was so good in terms of giving the qualifications?
Yeah, stealing the identity. That's a good question. I mean, you got to do a background check, I would assume, but you're probably not. I mean, you're not doing fingerprint exam, so maybe you're not knowing that there's a chance that this is the wrong person. I mean, people go to, you know, I guess it's not the same, but people are going to the internet to find diagnosis. What the hell's the difference about getting a fake nurse?
I think a few years ago, wasn't there a doctor online that was, you know, prescribing a bunch of patients and stuff?
And like, he was the kid.
That kid
who did it, the like 15-year-old. And they, catch me if you can, he faked being a doctor.
He did, and a pilot, and a lawyer.
Oh, it was Johnny Sins.
Who's that?
What? Hang on a second. What?
That's funny.
You got to get the joke.
I like it.
You did. Text 877-881-1053.
My son loves you now for saying that.
But look, I mean, she almost had the life hack down. You know, you steal identity and then succeeding. You know, sometimes we do it on Wednesdays, life hacks. But she came up just short here, and now she's going to prison for probably a long time, and she's only 29 years old. So there's that.
Tough for her.
All right, guys. Look, it is official. It was announced last night. I know Bobby doesn't like talking about it, but he loves to talk about things that get a bunch of traffic, a bunch of retweets out there. It's happening. We're getting another Taylor Swift album. Look, the Swifties were all over this. The New Heights podcast with Travis and Jason Kelsey. They put out the silhouette and all the graphics yesterday morning that there was going to be a special guest. They didn't announce who it was, but the Swifties said, oh, wait, the glitter's the same on the background as, you know, what Taylor had on her album. You know, they found the right picture that fit, you know, their picture. They were all over it. And so Taylor Swift is releasing an album later on. But she is also going to be on the next New Heights podcast, which releases tomorrow evening, I believe.
Yeah, I don't care about the album. Bobby will cover that.
This is a good song.
I want all three New Music Monday songs to be Taylor.
Hey, Tay, baby.
Monday at 8:20. I'm really interested in looking forward to the podcast.
Okay.
Because I want to see what their dynamic is. I want to see, go inside their relationship. I want to see how she really is, you know? So I want to see how cheesy it is, how real it is, how authentic it is, how funny it is, how dumb it is. I just want to judge their relationship through this podcast.
You want to sniff out if it's a fake, if it's a fake relationship. You're going to try and see like, all right, do these two people really?
Yeah. Is she responsible for his hair? Is she naturally funny? Is he laughing at fake jokes? Is she not funny? How's she get along with the brother? All these things.
Yeah, this is a reality show. Rial-a-Reef. Rial-a-Reef.
What is that?
I don't know what that
Reality
means.
Reality Sharif. Rial-a-Reef.
Oh.
That's what this is. We're workshopping it here.
Yeah,
it's a work in progress, okay? I don't care about this.
You're not going to tune in just for
No.
Really?
I don't. No. I don't listen to their podcast anyway.
Posted at 12:12 on the 12th. Taylor's 12th album is called whatever. It's got 6.4 million retweets right now just for the hype of it tomorrow.
Here's the thing. Wow. That the biggest problem I have here is not anything to do with Taylor. Look, you got to have Taylor on. Fine. Do it. The clip they posted, the promo clip, the very brief one they posted of her and Travis interacting, seems very cute with each other. That's nice. Whatever else. The bigger problem I have here is, Peyton, why are you giving them credit? For like, oh, the Swifties found out it was her. Did anybody look at that silhouette of a girl that was going on New Heights and think anything other than, oh, that's Taylor Swift? Why are we trying to credit they saw glitter in the background?
Well,
that was
just
very
amazing.
Clearly Taylor
it's
Swift.
It's just amazing the research they did for it. Like, I mean, it was all the specifics. Yeah. It was the background and everything. It was like, okay, these people are really addicted to this woman, which, I mean, I get. She's very popular. But, I mean, the silhouette, yes. I mean, I guess you could tell, okay, if it's a girl, it's got to be Taylor Swift. They've had her on yet on the podcast. But, yeah, tomorrow night, Wednesday.
Like, how deep are they going to go into their relationship? Like, Jason going to pressure them about proposal and all these things? Is she going to? Are they going to ask her about getting booed when she appeared scarred and stunned at the Super Bowl? I'm interested in it. I know many, 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 many Tolos probably will not be. I want to see if I come out of this. Peyton, are you interested at all?
Yes, 100%.
All right. Do you think you're going to come out of it thinking more or less of her? And what do you think of her now?
Well,
you find her annoying, genuine, likable. I find her genuine and likable so far, right?
Yeah,
now.
I think a lot of the hate is just because, oh, NFL, you know, you take over my Sundays now. Yeah. You're always on the screen. You know, the manly man football guys don't like it. But no, I really like her. I mean, obviously, McKenzie being a Swiftie herself, you know, has had me grown a lot, you know, towards Taylor Swift in a positive way. I mean, I expect a lot, but I know it's not going to be what I expect. It might be a letdown, the whole thing. Like, I don't think they're going to give away anything crazy. I doubt any marriage topics are going to come up. Maybe Jason says, you know, teases something, but I don't think they're going to want to talk about it. I mean, her PR team is probably all over it. So nothing big's going to happen, but it's going to do numbers. I mean, this thing's going to put up, you know, Joe Rogan podcast numbers.
I won't watch it because I'm sure I would like her more if I watched it.
Oh,
I don't want to.
Stop
it. I want to dig in. No, that's the thing. Whenever I've decided I don't like somebody, in my head I go, I don't want to know anything more about you because then I'm probably going to find like, oh, no, they're still a normal person and I don't want
that.
Which
is a really, stupid personality trait of yours.
Yeah. That is mm-hmm. psychotic behavior.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Well, I don't want to change my mind. It was my mind to begin with.
I'm right. Exactly.
We know Thursday, 6:40, we have the payload, so maybe we'll have to play some clips and recap it.
Hey, it's
perfect.
That.
Perfect
tease
timing.
Ahead.
You know,
tease
amazing.
It ahead, man.
Unbelievable. 6:40 every Thursday. But all right, it is PP in the morning here every Tuesday at this time.
I still laugh at the name.
I'm surprised that hasn't been shut down yet. But it's a good name. It's a great name. Peyton Phillip is what it stands for, even though my middle name is not Phillip. Jake Rima came in here the other day and was like, Peyton, I had no idea your middle name is Phillip. I said, it's not, Jake. All right, guys, cruises. It is Alec, but Medford is the worst of the Alecs. But all right, guys, we'll talk about cruises here. Not the poop cruise. I know we all we all see the documentary thing. I think Sean was out whenever we had talked about it, but I watched it. I thought it was fun.
For what?
The poop cruise.
Oh, I watched it.
Yeah. Have you guys been on a cruise before? Yeah, I have not.
I've not
been on two cruises.
Well,
so I brought this up to Mackenzie because she said, "All right, I'm in charge of the honeymoon wherever we go." I was like, "Oh wow, okay." I first thought of Vegas. She said,
"What are you actually in charge of, Peyton, anymore these days?"
Not a whole lot, except for the honeymoon. I will be in charge unless I screw it up. You know, I pick some dumb destination or book a bad flight time or whatever. But I brought up cruises. Neither me and Mackenzie have been on a cruise yet, and I was like, "Okay, is this something romantic that people do on honeymoons?" I think Tim Collins said this past weekend when we were working the Cowboy game that him and his wife went on a cruise for their honeymoon.
Every year.
So I think it's unique in a way. But, I mean, is that a bad honeymoon spot, I guess? Or should I be more romantic with it?
For a cruise?
Yeah. I mean, now it wouldn't be like, you know, a carnival or something. It would be like a higher class cruise, I guess. But.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you would have to go on one to where you can get off on the different islands for extended periods of time.
Okay.
So where you feel like, okay, like, I don't know. Some people just don't like cruises. They don't like being trapped. Like, Bobby would probably jump. He'd feel, you know, just like he was in a cage.
Mm-hmm. My mom hated it. She just went on one to Alaska.
Why?
You're just trapped on the boat. Like, she wanted to get off the boat more and...
Yeah, are you guys adventurous people, or you want to sit... You want to go and explore? Because if you want to go and explore, don't go on a cruise.
Explore, but, and this might not make sense, but explore, but not like an all-day thing. Like, you know, like, we don't want to be out from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. exploring. Like, you know, it's like, do something in the morning and then relax. Or relax in the morning.
In Italy, how many hours a day did you go and sightsee and tour?
Oh, I mean, the whole day. My family, when we go on, because it was all my parents ran everything. You know, they had the itinerary, everything. Yeah. We were out from 8 a.m. until, you know.
And if you had your way, it would have been how many hours per day?
Half the day. Italy, with there being so much, because we didn't just stay in Rome, we went to Verona and Florence. Whoa. So I'd probably say 5 or 6 hours a day, but it was just so hot, everything that kind of made it
if you want to do 3 hours a day of sightseeing and you go to somewhere different, I would not go on a cruise.
So this cruise story here happened a few days ago. This was a pretty scary moment on a Royal Caribbean cruise where a man was going down the water slide but fell right through the slide after a glass panel broke. Aiden has it up on the Fan Cam Twitch and YouTube. But the good news is the guy that fell wasn't seriously hurt. He was the only one that was hurt. No one else went after him. But you can kind of see the water spewing out, and it's not like the poop cruise where the sewage water spewing out. And thank goodness no one came on after him. But people were panicking, you know, hoping that someone saw it eventually. Didn't send anyone down. But yeah, very scary moment here on a cruise. And I mean, you have water everywhere. You're stuck on there. And obviously, you lose one of your entertainment values.
Where's the video?
It's probably delayed on the thing.
It's delayed on our video. It was up there the whole time.
He fell through that?
Yeah, I guess the glass panel was, I don't know, a week or so, or already cracked, and he went through. I don't know, and they didn't say it was a weight issue or whatever. I haven't seen a picture of the guy himself. So he just went right through. They fell through, and it looks like, 15, 20 feet from the bottom there. So.
And you saw that, and you're like, hey, dear, do you want to maybe go on a cruise?
Let's just not go on the slide. You know, we'll stay in the
maybe you guys watch the Amy Bradley Is Missing one and then documentary and then go on the cruise.
Why are you trying to put that in his head?
Well, we still don't know what happened to her.
Yeah, I know. So why would you try to put it? Hey, I mean, Mackenzie, you could be taken off of the boat, and just we never know what happened to you.
PP in the morning every Tuesday at this time here on Sean and RJ. Thanks for being a total. That stands for Turn It On, Leave It On. Why another former NFL player is drinking the Schottenheimer Kool-Aid. That's next in B-Low.
B-Belt.
On the home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
My belt.
We're not. Over to you, Bobby.
Who the hell wants or needs Ben Johnson? Certainly not Cowboys fans. Let's talk about it here Below the Belt, which is sponsored by D&M Leasing. Check them out at dmautoleasing.com. Bucky Brooks, former NFL player, former NFL executive. I don't know if you would call him an executive. Personnel man, we'll say. There you go. Who writes now for NFL.com and does different podcasts. He does the big one that he does is Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah, where they look at, you know, team building, roster philosophy, a lot of draft stuff, different things like that. He had done a write-up, an article on the 7 new NFL head coaches, and he's trying to see which one of these coaches is going to be the most successful right out of the gate in year one. And I was stunned when I opened this up. Bucky's got some different takes every now and then, but still, I was stunned when I opened it up that his number one head coach in terms of who's going to have the most success, immediate success in 2025, is none other than Brian Schottenheimer. But then it all made sense when you read the write-up. This is what Bucky Brooks writes. He says, I just spent some time at Cowboys training camp in Oxnard. You can stop right there. Right there immediately. As soon as every single player now that we've seen that gets around, anybody who used to be an NFL player that gets around Schottenheimer's Cowboys, they are loving all the old school team building, chemistry, emphasis, and this is the difference right here. This is how you win football games, and clearly that's why I guess Lewis Riddick has not gotten around Brian Schottenheimer at this point with all the shots he keeps taking. But this is the write-up. He said, I just spent time at Cowboys training camp in Oxnard, and there is a vibe around this team that is a direct reflection of its energetic new leader who has emphasized connectivity between players and coaches since day one. Through the newfound chemistry, or though the newfound chemistry must be completed with a disciplined approach that features more accountability and attention to detail, Dallas's talented roster could finally maximize its potential under the direction of a first-time head coach utilizing a blueprint that helped his dad, Marty Schottenheimer, win 200 regular season games. As an offensive-minded coach with a seasoned franchise quarterback, a beefy O-line, and a collection of playmakers in the passing game, Schottenheimer has the firepower to go toe-to-toe with the league heavyweights. If the Cowboys can mend their relationship with superstar edge rusher Micah Parsons, Dallas's defense could produce enough splashy plays to tilt games in the Cowboys' favor, ultimately spawning a return to the postseason for America's team.
Doesn't he work for DallasCowboys.com as well?
No, he does not.
He doesn't.
He does not.
Never did.
He did one season. He did like contract work on one of the draft shows, but that was I think 5 years ago.
And this is who's going to have the most success year one.
Yep.
Okay. Who are the other? Just name the other coaches.
Number two on this list is Ben Johnson.
Just read through all of the names real quick, not in order.
Ben Johnson with the Bears, Mike Vrabel with the Patriots, Liam Cohen with the Jaguars, Pete Carroll with the Raiders. Aaron Glenn
Cohen with the Jags,
Aaron Glenn with the Jets, and then Kellen Moore with the Saints.
I mean, look, it's obvious of the first year coaches, because I don't count Carroll and Vrabel in this. Of the first year coaches, like it's obvious, like Shoddy has the best team.
Why wouldn't you count them?
Because they're not rookie head coaches.
No,
I'm counting a first year new program. But the point of me wanting to get those names is to see who clearly had the best situation.
Yeah. Right.
And Dallas has the best team.
Do you think
the best roster?
Do you think they have a better roster than Chicago right now?
Yeah, I think the Cowboys are going to have a better season than the Bears.
Okay. That's a very, in fact, I do want to put this down because I know
you think the Bears are going to have more wins?
No. In fact, I'm going to put it. Do you have a sticky note over there anywhere? I'm going to get one during the break.
I get one.
I need to get one during the break because I need to put it up on our newly naked wall of takes up there. That I think by the end of this first season, there's a lot of people going to be like, Ben Johnson does not have it. Like, I don't think Ben Johnson is going to. I think Ben Johnson's reputation is not even for anything that goes on with the Bears. I think people are just going to say, this dude is. You constantly find these, like, super advanced X's and O's guys that when they step in, it's like managing a team is different. And it becomes a problem early on in their career.
Well, see, this is the fickleness of narratives. Who's going to catch the heat? Caleb or Ben Johnson?
What were you going off about Ben Johnson a couple weeks ago? Is there any chance of you remembering?
Not a clue.
I can tell you what I go off on Ben Johnson about the whole time is that Ben Johnson to me he's a really good play caller. I think it's been oversold a little bit how just unique what he's doing is. They had really good playmakers. They have really good players in Detroit. That's what makes a big difference for them.
I know what it was.
What was it?
He was making the goals for Caleb Williams public. And like his goal was like 70% completion percentage. And that's really good, but like then you're getting like a risk averse. What are you looking at?
I'm just saying that's really high a goal for Caleb Williams.
Like it's risk averse. Like here's to me, it's like announcing to the world your goals for him to be so specific that by the end of the year, this opened things up well for he didn't reach his goals. And that leads to in-season talking points from the media. Like, I don't know. Goals are goals. A goal's just that. Like, you don't have to hit them. You cannot hit your goals and still succeed.
Yeah, and that's what they'll say when he doesn't. If he has a 68%, they'll still praise him. It's not going to be, he failed.
But you know, you know Chicago media.
No. There's
these Mike Norths of the world are going to sit there, or Yurko, whatever his name is.
It depends on the wins. If they have 9 or 10 wins, they won't worry that he came up 3 percentage points short on the completion percentage.
I think it's good that we've talked about it all offseason. I don't know if I've brought this up or if we've discussed this since you guys had a chance. So we were out there. I was obviously at the Star over the summer and saw some of these practices and different things like that. When we were in Oxnard, that was the first time you guys had a chance to stand there and watch the practices and the way Shoddy runs them and everything else. Did you come away from that thinking any of the culture stuff you had heard over the summer was maybe this is overhyped, or did you go out there and say, no, there is a different energy it feels like around this football team right now?
I mean, they have a different energy to start practice. By the third time they were doing it, it felt a little forced. That was a pep rally. Every day we have a scheduled pep rally. And no, to be honest, like I didn't sit there watching practice saying, oh my gosh, this is different. It doesn't mean it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't sitting there on the sidelines saying, this is so much different from McCarthy or Garrett.
And Chop, you've been generally.
I think it will be different. I didn't notice it.
And is it just going to be as simple as if they win games, people will say that's great that they're doing, and if they lose games, that's corny and it's pep rally stuff? And is it just as simple as wins and losses at that point?
I mean, wins and losses help, obviously. Like, if you're winning games, it doesn't matter what your practices or culture.
A lot of this is going to be based upon what you tell us on and off the record.
Sure. I just mean, if they win football,
behind the scenes?
What you saw out there in practices and different things like that, is the general narrative going to be that's the difference if they win, but if they lose, people are going to say, this is like amateur hour. This is not high school football. You do not need to have little pep rally. What you need is discipline. You need to do this. Because it's not very process-oriented for a lot of people, I don't feel like. It's going to be outcome-based completely, and it's a little like, we have these discussions all the time, right? Like ourselves about what we're doing on the show. Where if, you know, the ratings are good in a stretch, or if they're lower than we want in a stretch, then what we do is, like, we have a tendency to look at it and go, what's the right play? Is the right play to adjust to that information? Or is the right play to say, no, what we're doing is right, it's process-based, and it's going to have an outcome. I just don't know that Schottenheimer has the ability to wait that out. All right, Dak Prescott is making a strong prediction.
Well, let's get the order of the list.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that you wanted to do the rest of the list. I just wanted to know
the names to get the Shotty's placement. Oh, okay. What's the order who's going to have success year one?
Number two is Ben Johnson and the Chicago Bears. He says the Dennis Allen-led defense will need to generate enough stops to give new and improved offense a chance to wear down opponents. He says the Bears could be a 10-win squad, which means he thinks Dallas is 11-plus, potentially.
Okay.
Then next on this list was Liam Cohen with the Jaguars.
Don't need to recap or whatever. Just give the names.
Vrabel with the Patriots. Pete Carroll with the Raiders. Aaron Glenn with the Jets. And then last with the number one pick, potentially in tow, is Kellen Moore and the New Orleans Saints.
That makes sense. I can see that. I can see the last two.
Pete's going to have more wins than... I could argue putting Pete behind Schottenheimer number two.
I think Pete... I mean, look, if Geno Smith is able to find comfort with Pete Carroll again, then they can be successful. They've got a lot of playmakers on defense.
They'll be an 8 or 9 win team, maybe 9 wins.
Over at CBS Sports, they covered the viral clip that was shared by one Mike Leslie over at WFAA.
God.
Dak Prescott went up to Rams owner Stan Kroenke, and they were talking amongst themselves. It was Steven, Stan Kroenke, Jerry was over there. Dak went up, was just chatting with him a little bit, and the clip went viral because Dak said, "We'll meet y'all in the NFC Championship," before he walked off. This is the top story yesterday on Get Up. I think it was the top story on First Take as well, as Dak predicts NFC title game between him and the Rams. Isn't this basically just like a greeting of sorts, or like a
this is annual. This is Dak's annual event. He tells someone every year. Cool, hardcore delivery. We'll see you in the Super Bowl. We'll see you in the championship game. It means absolutely nothing. My eyes can't roll out of my head fast enough when he does this.
Do you think he says it to literally everyone at the end of games? Or do we only catch him saying it to, like, because they caught him at the end of game one a couple years ago saying it to Brady and the Bucks, where he's like, "We'll see y'all in the playoffs." Yeah.
I'm like, okay, that's cool. Yeah. That's fun. It shows your belief. And I'm not like, okay, dude.
Like, do you think Brady ever said that to anybody? I would assume not.
Probably not. I wouldn't guess so. That doesn't seem like him, but
I think a lot of these guys say it.
I just wonder if, like, now that he's been caught saying this to the Rams, can he not say that to anybody else this year?
I mean, the worst thing could be his evaluation of the Rams, too.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's Bobby's.
He doesn't know a good football team when he sees one, clearly. Yeah. He thought the Bucks were going to the Super Bowl that year. Man,
come on, ESPN. Can't you do a little bit better than to just take that and then make the headline? Is Dak crazy? Is he out of his mind for saying NFC? Sometimes I think that the topics being written out on television hurt them a lot. I wonder if there's a different, more creative way not to just be so low-hanging fruit. But I guess maybe, you know, it worked for First Take, I guess, with their ratings. Mm. Is Dak crazy? Do the Cowboys have enough to make it to the NFC Championship? Let's go around two shows. No. God, it's exhausting.
I'm sure that I have no idea what. There will be their lead story today will be something Emmett said last night or something. Emmett Smith goes
counter. It's already. It was Michael Irvin putting his head over in the interview and saying, "I'm telling Jerry, get the Micah deal done." And that, off we go.
It's always something.
It's so pathetic. We should just start programming television sports. We change Bally.
We program First Take every day.
We change Bally. We program First Take, and we told FS1 what to do. We should be TV executives, right, or be on TV.
Or be on TV. Simulcast. Or just cast.
Or cast. Below the belt on the home of the Cowboys here every day at this time on Sean and RJ. It's DFW Sports Station 105.3. The Fan, Tommy Yarsh from Oxnard at 9:20. But Choppy says Vegas does not want your Rangers to win the American League West. We'll recap the magical comeback on the home of the Rangers with some Diamond Cavs next.